Warning, Small Business Naked contains illicit business content. Real stories from real small business owners. You're listening to Small Business Naked with Nick and Johnny. It's time to get naked.
Hey, thanks for joining us on Small Business Naked. I'm Nick.
And I'm Johnny Battle.
Hey, John, we've got a really great guest today. I mean, he's a buddy of yours.
Yes, Donnie Shelton. And don't judge this, but he owns and founded a pest control company. And man, does he got some cool stuff to share with us.
So I think he is in the United States, but he's far, far away from us.
Did you notice I said pest control, not pet supply?
Yeah, I'm glad that you corrected yourself this time. But anyways, we're going to get into our interview with Donnie in just a little bit. But before we do, I got a little bit of business, John. I'm going to go through it really quick. A couple of things I need to let you guys know. This show would not be possible if it wasn't for our friends over at M Help Desk and VA Staffer. VAstaffer.com. If you've got any internet stuff, if you've got back office stuff, if you need research done on your competitors, on potential clients, check out VA Staffer. Jay is going to give you 2 hours of free work just to try them out. So go check out VAstaffer.com. And then my friends over at M Help Desk, we had Vincent on a couple of shows ago. Vincent is the CEO, but what they do is they organize all of your invoices and all of your customer contacts and all of your communication that you need to do, bids and estimates and work orders and all that stuff. I've been using them for 2 years, way before we were doing this show. But they've come on, and I think they're a great resource if you run a service-based business. Go check them out at mhelpdesk.com.
Nick started this interview with his favorite question. Where in the world are you?
I am in Raleigh, North Carolina. I've been here since, I grew up in Raleigh. I am not in Raleigh, but in North Carolina. And I came here to go to school. I'm an NC State grad, Wolfpack. We suck at pretty much all sports, but there is a university there. And it is tough to be an NC State fan. But yeah, I'm in Raleigh. I've been here since I went to school here, and I just decided to stay.
Now, Donnie, I know you better than Nick, obviously, but for our listeners and Nick, why don't you give us the backstory of what you got going on business-wise, because you got a few projects going on.
I do. So, I actually have quite a few things going on. So after college, I went back into the Air Force. I've been in the military since I was 17, and I was active duty the first time I got out. I went to school at State, and then right after I got done with school, right before I graduated, I was a software engineer. I worked for a company called Progress Energy, who has now been gulfed up by Duke Energy. But I was a software developer, and I went back into the Air Force as a reservist. And so I'm a pilot in the reserves. I've been flying for almost 12 years now. I fly the KC-135. And so that's kind of my first part-time job, I guess you'd say. I've been doing that, since I graduated college. And when I got back from training, you know, I went from flying every day to back to a cubicle, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I literally, it was like I'd been gone almost 3 years and I'd never missed a beat. Like, I literally sat down at my desk and I was working on the same projects that I was working on when I left. And so pretty soon after I realized that software development was not for me, I decided that I wanted to start my own business or get into business in general. So what I did was I applied to Duke University. I wanted to be a corporate hotshot. And oddly enough, and I don't know how I pulled this off, but somehow, some way, I got into their MBA program. And that was kind of my path. That was what I was going to do. I just got done with pilot training and I had some pretty good experience in my belt, and I just, you know, I'm like, hey, this is a great plan. I'm going to go and run a company somewhere. And then I got a $95,000 bill from Duke. And that's when I decided, you know what, I don't know if this is going to be a good plan for me, because I didn't have $95,000. And so I got very interested in maybe starting my own business. And so I did a lot of research on different industries, and, you know, the pest control industry is a wonderful industry. And the reason that it is because it's not dominated by two or three different companies. I mean, if you look at the market in pest control, in general, you know, the larger companies control about 38 to 40%, which means that the other 60% is controlled by mom and pops. And the other good thing about that industry is that the margins are pretty good. It's, you know, it's not uncommon for a pest control company to run anywhere from 10 to 30%, depending on, you know, their size. And so I decided that I wanted to, you know, to
10 to 30%, is that net or gross?
That's net.
Okay.
Net profit. And so it was actually pretty funny because, you know, I came home to my wife and my family and said, hey, I know I told you that I was going to go and be a Duke MBA, but I decided instead to open up a pest control company.
Which kill bugs.
That went over like a fart in church. I mean, it was everyone was like, oh my gosh, what do you
want to do? What?
Exactly. And so
I've had those conversations with my wife. It doesn't go well.
Exactly. So I did. So I ended up going around and I picked up the phone. And oddly enough, this is probably one of the funniest stories. I just started calling guys in my town. I'm like, hey, are you ever looking to retire? And so I found this like 80-year-old guy. His name is CB Tudor. And he had a small company. He was doing about 11,000 a year. He had like 23 accounts. And
did you say $11,000 a year?
A year. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so I ended up purchasing his company in a Wendy's, like Wendy's, the fast food restaurant. I purchased his company on a piece of paper in a Wendy's restaurant, and we went to the bank, got it certified. I handed him a $5,000 check and told him I'd pay him the rest when I had the money to do so. And that's how I got into this industry. So anyway, that was kind of how I started Triangle Pest. And you know, now this year, we're estimating revenues to be right at about $3 million. So, I mean, it has certainly come a long way from 11,000.
Well, I want to back you up, Downey. So you kind of brushed over this topic of you just thought that pest control was good. Why did you how did you land on pest control?
Well, so when I was looking at this whole, you know, this $97,000 deal from Duke, one of the things that did is that kind of forced me to do some deep thinking about what is this MBA going to do for you, right? Like, ultimately, you know, what kind of life do you want to have? And so I ended up by that kind of forcing that thought, I ended up just kind of going online and you know, and I looked at different, I didn't really care what kind of business I went into. I just wanted to make sure that I had, that it was a business that I was able to be successful in, and that one that had enough safety in it that if I made a mistake, it wasn't going to kill me. And so I did a ton of market research. You know, I read a lot of different reporting, I read a lot of different reports.
That's what you guys do as MBAs, right?
Well, I think that is what you
do. So some of the education is
good. Wasn't all bad.
Although I did sleep at a Holiday Inn last night. So, I mean, I don't know, but no. So I ended up, mainly what drove that decision was really looking through different research studies and you know, looking at numbers of, you know, how these business operates. And quite honestly, you know, I think it is one of those industries that because of the stigma that's associated with what we do, people tend to minimize or not really see the opportunity from a business perspective. And hey, that's okay. I'm perfectly fine with that. And so that's really what led me down that road. I'm like, you know, this is not rocket science, you know, treating, and it is difficult, but it's not, you know, it's not undoable. So
when you were researching other businesses, what other businesses did you come across that you found interesting or intriguing or thought about doing also?
Well, you know, my background is in software development, that, you know, that's what I got my degree in. And oddly enough, I had done that through college. That's kind of how I put myself through college, is I did these really large projects. Like, one of the projects I did is I wrote a chemical tracking system for Wake Forest University, and that was enough money to get me through college. And I knew enough about software development to know that I did not want to make a living doing it, and I did not want to bet my financial future on doing it. But, you know, another business or industry I ran across that I think is just phenomenal, but I decided not to do it, oddly enough, is house cleaning. You know, home cleaning services, it's just amazing. I mean, those guys run margins north of 35 to 40 on average. And it's another kind of, you know, what most people would consider to be blue collar work, but the business model and how they work. I mean, you think about pest control, you know, we have a standard customer of ours We will see them anywhere from 3 to 4 times a year. We may collect between $400 and $500 out of that customer annually. So we need to do quite a bit of volume to push our numbers into the millions, right? Well, when you think about a home cleaning service, first of all, people never want to use pest control, right? No one sits around their couch on Saturday night and says, you know, I really want to have my house sprayed tomorrow. I wonder, you know, no one does that, right?
No, we put it off, and my wife hates spiders like none other. Like, she's just deathly afraid, and she still doesn't let me bring the pest control folks out on a regular basis.
And that's a, you know, and that's a reality. You know, the flip side of that is that, you know, it's almost like a double-edged sword, because, you know, a lot of people don't want us, but when they do want us and when they had a problem, as long as you like have a breath, if you can't sell the account, then there's something wrong with you, right? Meaning that someone calls up and says, look, I got ants all in my kitchen. If you say I can be there today and they can comprehend you, they're going to be like, okay, right? They're ready to go out, right? But the flip side of it is that in general, most people don't want to use your service. Now, flip that back to, you know, say home cleaning. Who doesn't want a clean home, right? And the amount of revenue that you collect per stop, let's just say you clean someone's home once a month now, and you're collecting, say, let's say $200. Okay, well, now that's a much different, you know, that's a much different scenario, you know, in terms of annual revenue. I mean, that is, you know, you think about it, okay, so we're already at $2,000, we had another 2 months out of that, that's $2,400 per customer. Versus, you know, my $500.
And that's so, if they just do it once a month.
That's
typically exactly. People are doing it twice a month or four times a month.
And I hear you talking. I got to ask you, why? How did you end up choosing pest control? Because you're selling me on house cleaning now.
Are you ready to go start a house cleaning business?
I don't know. Well, it's
Johnny and I have had this conversation for months now, to be honest, Donnie. So this is not helping the situation.
Well, one was the employee turnover. If you look at the stats in terms of turnover, you know, it's very difficult to pay someone at that price point and retain them for a substantial amount of time. You know, in our industry, it's amazing because, and we'll get to this in a minute because I've not got to all the company or, you know, all my business interests, but one of them is actually internet marketing. And, you know, you look at, say, a communications graduate or a person who has got a marketing degree, they're going to come out of college and make anywhere from $30,000 to $40,000 a year. You know, my technicians make, you know, we're anywhere from $40,000 to $50,000 a year, and I've got some that are over that. And so the point of it is that those guys tend to stay, right? I mean, and that makes, you know, and I'm sure you guys already know this being in business for a while, but retention is probably one of the most, that's a key metric and a key driver in your business. That consistency, once you get a staff that's trained and knows what they're doing, man, oh my gosh, this makes your life so much easier. You get better customer service, you get better sales, everything gets just 10 times better. And so that was one of the things that kind of scared me away from that business. I don't know that it would scare me so much now, knowing what I know now, but you got to remember, when I was looking at pest control, my vision was, you know, I'll take this company to 500,000 and, you know, I'll make, you know, 50 to 80 grand a year and I'll be happy. And that, you know, you get to that level, and then what's the next thing? And so really it was the employee turnover that kind of shied me away from going into that industry. Does that help?
Yeah. I have a question for you, and tell me if I'm right or wrong in this. I understand, as far as Triangle Pest Control is concerned, that you built that business 100% digitally. Is that true?
That is correct.
And yeah. tell us a little bit about more of how you did that and why you did that, and, you know, staying away from some of the traditional methods that people use to grow pest control companies.
I won't say that I've completely stayed away from that. You know, I tend to be one that I like to experiment, and while sometimes you swing for the fences and it's a home run, a lot of times you walk away with, you know, your ass between your legs, and you're like, oh, that was stupid. I'll never do that again. But yeah, so when I, you know, when I started my business, you know, the internet was nothing new, but marketing on the internet was not something that our industry was very strong at. And so I immediately saw an opportunity in our market. I'm like, man, these guys are asleep at the wheel. And so with my background in software, and also, you know, I was fairly young, well, a lot younger than most owners, I decided, you know what, I'm going to optimize a site. I'm going to use pay-per-click, and I'm going to see how far I can go. And at that time, when no one's paying attention to it, I mean, you couldn't even think the word pest online, and I not own, you know, five of the top 10 links organically as well as a pay-per-click ad. I mean, it was literally, it was open season. And so I optimized our site, you know, and really went to the digital side of things right out the get-go. And it was great. I mean, now, you know, the market's a little different. Everyone knows that, you know, in our industry, I think any kind of need-based business, you have to be strong online. But that was not the, you know, 8 years ago, 6 years ago, that is something as of the last 4 years that people have really come to understand in our industry. But before, they didn't know that. And so I just took advantage of that opportunity. And you know, I had many sites. I mean, I probably my nickname was Sir Spamalot. I'm sure Google hated me. But you know, now, you know, all those rules have changed. I mean, all the things that I knew and all the things that I did is considered to be black hat SEO, and you know, we can't do that anymore, and we don't as a company, but at the time, you know, it was the Wild West and you could do that. And so you're exactly right in that, you know, I took things, I didn't use, or I had a couple of friends that I knew that had done that, and I didn't really like that model because, one, it's extremely expensive. Two, you know, to grow a company under that, it can be done. But it's extremely difficult because you take on so much volume during the summer, you know, the amount of infrastructure that you've got to invest in before that happens, and then to pull it off so that the customer gets a great experience in the end, it's very difficult to do that. And then, you know, if you don't have any money, which I didn't, you can't go on TV or radio. And so I would love to tell you that I'm some genius and that, you know, I had this all planned out before I started, but essentially I had no money and I had to find options. And that was the best one I could come up with at the time. So,
Donnie, do you think if you were doing that same thing today, do you think you would be able to be as successful?
Yeah, I do. I do. The beautiful thing about owning your own business and kind of driving the boat is ultimately it comes down to, and I don't want to sound cliches here, but it comes down to how hard you're willing to work. There are a few, one of the things I like are second generation business owners, and because typically they're lazy, not always, but and again, now you're getting Donnie's opinion, I'm not telling it's right, and if it offends someone, then oh well, I don't want to. but it's just in my experience, a lot of guys, you know, once they get to a certain level, they get very comfortable and they don't see opportunities, or they see opportunities and then they don't execute. And so ultimately what it comes down to, you know, being successful, I think, in any business is, you know, seeing an opportunity and then just working like hell until you get where you need to be. And you know, ultimately that I think is probably the key metric of success as to whether or not someone's going to, I mean, you think about companies like Zappos, for example. Like, who the hell would have thought that they could grow that into a $1 billion company selling shoes? Like, just, you know, even, I mean, we know that now, of course, and Zappos is like, oh my gosh, it's such a great company, right? But sitting back, you know, 10 years ago, whatever, and says, well, we're going to sell shoes online. Like, who would have even imagined that that could even be done? You know what I mean? Like, there's a market out there that could grow that into a $1 billion company. To answer your question, yes, I do, because I really enjoy business and I enjoy what I do and I enjoy working. I mean, that's the fun part for me. It's not necessarily, you know, I don't get a jolly out of going out and spraying a house and, you know, or, you know, okay, if I get to a million and I'm done, it's really playing the game that I really enjoy.
Speaking of that, what do you want to do with Triangle Pest Control? I mean, do you want to grow this into multiple locations? I mean, what's your strategy from here on out?
Yeah. So right now we are, we're in the Charlotte market and we're in the Raleigh market. We want to continue to grow it geographically. And you know, ultimately, I hate to throw out a number because every time I throw out a number and we hit it, then I just set a new one. But for right now, the new number of the week, I should say, is right about 20 million. You know, I'd like to take it to 20 million. I'd like to have it in multiple markets, which we've already started that. And, you know, where it goes from there, you know, I don't know. We, you know, there's still other services we could add to it. We could add lawn care. We could add house cleaning. there's a lot of different things that we could do with the company. But ultimately with Triangle, you know, Triangle is a wonderful business in that, you know, I don't run the day-to-day operations for that business anymore. You know, I went through a while back, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit later on. But you know, have you guys ever read the book E-Myth?
Yeah.
I think everybody we talk to brings up that book.
Every time we talk to an entrepreneur, they always
bring that book up.
There's probably a trend there then because, you know, I remember one day I had just been, you know, getting your ass kicked. And so I'm like driving to the base. I had been working and drilling a house out all morning. And I'm getting ready to go and jump on an airplane and fly it until midnight and then get back up at 6 a.m. and go do the same thing again. And so I'm driving down the base and I pick up this audiobook and I'm listening to it. And it was like my entire perspective changed. Like, you know, what the hell am I doing here? And once I kind of caught that, like what it really meant, you know, I got to work making sure that, you know, I turned my business into something that was kind of serving what I wanted to do, not me killing myself while everyone else was not doing that. And so after reading that, you know, I went through structurally and did it, you know, systems, you know, procedures and checklists, which is pretty, for me, it's kind of second nature. I mean, you don't fly an airplane, you know, by winging it, if you know what I mean. I mean, I'm very comfortable with procedures. I'm very comfortable with running checklists and those types of things. And so I came back to the business and kind of brought that, you know, that paradigm into our business. And that was not an easy thing to do. It took me almost 2 years to pull that off and to do it. But you know, now that it's done, gosh, you know, my life is just so much easier because I'm not, you know, I'm just not hammered with the day to day. And so that I think is probably one of the biggest accomplishments. I mean, obviously the numbers are good, the, you know, margins are good and stuff like that. But the fact is that, you know, yesterday I went and flew an airplane in the morning and I went to my house and I jumped on my mountain bike and I did a 30-mile bike ride and the business went on no problems at all.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
How have you structured that then? So you're not in the day to day. Who do you have doing the different things in your business so that A, customers keep coming in and B, customers keep getting serviced?
So in terms of the structure of the business, on the books, I guess you could say I'm the CEO. I'm still involved in planning and, you know, I'm still involved in marketing. I think that's a key thing that I should always kind of keep my thumb on, but I have a COO. And he has a corporate manager under him. He has two branch managers under him. He has one for our Raleigh branch and one for our Charlotte branch. And then each position has what I call a position contract. And essentially it lays out exactly, hang on, I'm getting a call here. Should I let it go? You want to?
Yeah, let's talk to him.
But yeah, so we have, so when I went through, you know, I talked about, I heard E-Myth and, you know, this is, that kind of was a life changing book. I started with my frontline positions and literally I thought through like, okay, we're going to write procedures for each frontline position and then I'm going to create checklists for that. And so I have done that all the way back up to the COO. So literally the COO has a checklist that he runs. I have software that tracks what he does. The software, yeah, and I don't want to get into that, but that's another business that I have. I'm getting texted. This is crazy.
blowing you up over there.
I know it. And so ultimately, it's, you know, my role switched from once I kind of had that experience, I kind of viewed my role and what I did completely different. You know, and I took on, you know, now my job is not to you know, treat the home or to deal with this employee issue. My job is to build systems, right? My job is to build systems that generate customers, that generate, you know, leads, and ultimately generates, you know, profit. And so now, kind of thinking through it, I have a COO who has three managers report to him, and then they have kind of leads or whatever, and then our frontline folks. We have a pretty flat organization in that regard, and ultimately, I make sure that I do everything I can to empower our frontline folks. I push down decision making as far to the frontline as humanly possible. And I've always ran my business that way because, you know, a technician out in the field. I mean, you know, typically we have procedures and checklists. Those are guidelines. But the guy that's on the front line, you know, he's going to have all the knowledge to make the right decision. So why should we, you know, why should we try to prevent that? Or you know, why would I, as a business owner, you know, pull that up to someone else and just create more inefficiencies in the business? And so we do a lot of training for our frontline folks. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, like, literally they have, you know, by the time a person gets through our training program, they have taken over 200 exams. And so it's, you know, it's a big deal for us. And I think ultimately, you know, you ask, how did I pull this off? It's one, doing the work that no one wants to do, right? No one wants to sit down and write procedures or checklists. I mean, I know me personally, I'd rather, you know, drill screws through my toenails, but it's work that has to be done. You know, that's the infrastructure that you need in order to scale your business. And then the second thing is that, you know, training your people to be better than you are at specific tasks. I mean, you know, right now my COO, he's better at things than I'm at. And, you know, my frontline folks, if I rolled up to a house right now and trying to treat it, I'm sure a customer would probably run me off their property. But that's exactly what you do as a business, right? Is to find, you know, create these systems, get people really, really good at it, and make them so they're better than you, so that, you know, over time, you know, all that comes together for a great, you know, for a great service for your customer. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah. What are some of the stuff you're doing now outside of the digital marketing, more of the traditional stuff? What are you playing around with?
Well, you know, the only thing that I do outside of digital marketing, and I've done it pretty consistently for the last 5 years, is radio. And that is even, you know, now that's even kind of transitioning as well. You know, we're experimenting with Pandora and a few other, you know, YouTube and those types of services. But outside of digital, we don't really have much of anything. We're so focused right now on dialed in. I mean, we do email marketing. We do postcards to current customers. You know, we do some radio, but the vast majority is creating great content, you know, finding ways that we can help people who, we call it the awareness ladder, you know, trying to find ways to pull people into our site and then pull them through the funnel and on the backside, hopefully end up with a sale. And even if we don't end up with a sale, we give them a great article. And then when they do have a problem, they'll remember it and come back to us. At least that's the hope. So
Donnie, this idea of creating content is just everywhere right now. Everyone is talking about, you got to create good content. What kind of content are you creating? Because I gotta think, I don't know if I would want to really read an article about pest control. I just want it, you know, done. But what are you guys creating that's getting people to read?
Well, first of all, let me just tell you, you're an odd bird. Most people want to know about furcula.
Thanks, Donnie. Thanks.
Yeah. No, you know what? You're absolutely right. And it is a challenge for our industry. But there are things that, for example, that people want to know. Like, no one ever wants to. It goes back to the same concept I said before. No one sits on their couch on Saturday night and says, you know, I really want to have my house treated. However, when someone gets up at 3 a.m. and there's a big fat roach, you know, laying across their bed and they freak out, the first thing they're going to do is grab their smartphone, their tablet, or they're going to jump in front of their computer and they're going to do a little research, right? Everyone thinks that, you know, when someone goes to buy a product, most of the time people are going to do a little research either on your company or their problem. And so that is where, you know, content comes into play, because you can think through, like, well, why would someone want to use my service, right? You kind of start there. Okay, I'm getting bites. Well, what does that mean, right? So you can write an article about, hey, I'm getting these bites, but I'm not for sure what they are. And that content can kind of walk them through, like, this is what you need to be thinking about. And by the way, the whole thing of content marketing, I think it is a little too, because I don't know about you guys, but half the crap I read on the internet, especially if it's like SEO'd out, it makes absolutely no sense. And so really putting yourself in the driver's seat of, what is it that my customer really, you know, what kind of problems are they going to experience and what are they going to want to know? And then tailoring that content to, you know, what that is. A lot of times people are like, well, I want to do content marketing, but they're too lazy to actually read it. And so they hand it off to content people who know nothing about your industry. They write this crap that you don't want to read. And if you don't want to read it, why do you think your customers are going to want to read it? And so a lot of times I'll write the content personally, or I'll have someone else write it and I'll do a lot of edits. But ultimately it's all about thinking through, why would someone want to use your service? What kind of problems would they have? And what would they be researching in order for, you know, that you can help. And so that I think is where you start in terms of content marketing.
And where are you putting that? Are you putting it on your own website?
Anywhere I can get it. You know, ultimately, you know, the majority of, you know, to get strong online, if you really want to be super strong online, the focus should not be on your website. The focus should be on what's happening outside of your website. So, for example, I'm sure you guys know about domain authority and, you know, and those types of things. And if you don't, I can explain it briefly. But essentially, domain authority is that, okay, this guy's a stud. This is Google talking, by the way. And this is how Google sounds, by the way, in case you don't want to. They're like, okay, so these guys are authority, or okay, these guys are small game. So for example, let's just say I'm talking lawn care. I know absolutely nothing about lawn care. But if John or someone else says, hey, you know, this is what's going on with lawn, most people are going to listen to him because he knows what the hell he's talking about, right? So the web is kind of the same thing. You know, Google has to make an analysis of, well, who knows what they're talking about and who doesn't? And ultimately that feeds into what we call domain authority, and that gets built over time. And so if I write an article on my site of a domain authority, say, of 10, well, that's nice, but it's not going to get a whole lot of attention. If I write an article and it gets pushed, say, on southernliving.com or it gets put on cnn.com, that's a completely different scenario. And oh, by the way, it has a link into my website, which makes that, oh, well, hey, these guys must know what they're talking about. And so a lot of my focus with content is not just on our site, but it's trying to get, you know, our you know, content on other sites with a link to our site. And that ultimately will build your own domain authority and help you, you know, in terms of rankings and those types of things. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. But how do you get on those bigger sites?
Oh, isn't that the ultimate question? So a lot of these sites have content calendars. And so really the only way, I won't say the only way, In our society, especially when it comes to pest control, people have this certain ick factor, like, and they want to share it. So the grosser or, you know, the most, the nastier you can make it typically draws people's attention. And that does not necessarily fit kind of the image that we're trying to project in our company. And so we'll write articles like, you know, how to prep your home for the spring, you know, how to pest-free your home, you know, for the perfect, you know, backyard barbecue or whatever. And so ultimately what you do is you try to build relationships with websites, and whenever they're looking for content, you can produce it, or two, and this is probably the better one, is you write content and you submit it to them and say, hey, this is something I think that your readers would benefit from. And if they agree, then that's how you get it. That's how you get that content out. But that's the question that you're asking is the ultimate question, and it makes it very, very difficult. It's not something that that is easy to do, which is why most SEO companies get paid extremely well.
Donnie, I don't want to back up too far, but I could think of one listener asking this question. Back when we were talking about, you were deciding what business to go into, and you said you did a lot of research. Where did you do that research? What tools did you use to get all this information?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember. I don't remember the specific names of the website, but there's tons of, you know, if you just kind of go out there and market research different industries, I mean, there's tons and tons of sites out there that does kind of these general industry reporting, you know, industry reports. And that's where I started. I don't remember the specific name of the website, but it'll go through different industries. It'll lay out their typical growth rates, their typical profit margins, you know, their typical operating ratios and those types of things. And that's, you know, again, I don't remember the specific site. I think I paid some money to get different reports. You know, it wasn't a whole lot of money. I mean, most of that stuff is like,
sure,
10 to 15 bucks, but that's how I did it.
Mostly online research, from yourself.
Exclusively online research.
Hey, Donnie, I wanted to ask you a question. Johnny and I were at an event last night talking with different small business owners, and actually a couple of our listeners were there, and we were talking about this idea that it's great to hear success stories from entrepreneurs and business owners, but what's really helpful is to know and to learn from some of the crap and some of the mistakes that we've made. What have been some challenges or some mistakes that you've made over the years that you go, man, I don't want to learn that one again?
Well, where do you want to start? I mean, that's, I will say this. I have learned a lot the hard way. you know,
that's encouraging because I seem to learn the hard way all the time.
Well, you know, and it's, I think that's one of those things that, that keeps a lot of people from going into business. You absolutely have to accept failure as part of the process of you succeeding. Like you just cannot, you know, you never meet someone that, and they're so deliberate about, you know, all, I mean, and my wife, I love her to death, but we're complete opposites. Like when it comes to like selecting, you know, what we're going to eat for dinner or what we're going to order. I mean, like it's a big decision for her. Me, I'm like 3 seconds. Okay, I'm ordering. That's just the way it is, right? So I backed it up to say that you have to accept the fact that you're going to fail and it's part of the process, right? When I look at what are some big failures that I had, I can talk about one I had last year. I call it my Ivy League education because that's essentially what I paid for this mistake. I paid almost $100,000 to learn this. So in our market, the Raleigh market, to run a television ad during network news, it is $100 per second. So if I'm going to run a 15-second ad, that's going to cost me $1,500. Now, I decided, you know, we're pretty much tapped out on the web. Our leads are flatline. We typically get about 5,000 leads a year online, which for our market size is phenomenal. But, you know, the amount of, if I pile more money into that, you know, my thought is that, well, I'm not going to get a huge bang for my buck here. You know, I've kind of tapped this out. So I want a new rabbit to pull out of my hat. So my thought was, like, well, let's go on television. Well, to really make an impact in our market, you can't go into this market with $100,000 and do it, not on television. But I thought I could, right? So we had a nice message and you know, and so we pressed with this plan.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think I saw your commercial online. You had a 15-second commercial online.
Yes.
Lady standing in a kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The 3 days lady.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
That little boy in that commercial is actually my son. But yeah, so we did that and oh my gosh, what a disaster. We I don't know that we got any leads from that. And you know, I am one that I have a pretty good tolerance for risk. I have a pretty good tolerance for, hey, things aren't looking good right now, but I'll persevere. And so I did that. And finally by June, it was like, hey, this is just not working, you know. And I think probably the big thing I learned out of that is that, you know, unless I've got over $1 million that I can just make enough saturation on TV, I'm not saying TV doesn't work. I'm just saying unless you've got real cash that you can go in and saturate the market, you're going to lose your ass because that's exactly what we did. We went in and, you know, we oh, my gosh, this is so bad. We owned one station, but we had no footprint on any other stations. And literally, I think we may have had two people tell us that they saw us on television. And those leads are hard to track. You know, you don't, I guess my point is our size, you know, we're going to be 3 million this year. We can't afford to brand. We have to buy leads because we've got to make sales. If I were, you know, $100 million company, if I was much, much bigger, then branding is kind of more of an important thing. But right now at my size, the big thing I learned of that is not what I should be doing. And I was told that before, but like I said, I like to experiment. So that was one. We could spend the rest of the podcast if you want talking about
that. Is radio much different than that, or is there a lot of similarities?
Radio is one of those things that there are similarities. And we do it a little differently. I own only one station. I'm on only one station. It's our number one station in our market. It fits our demographic just perfectly. It's contemporary. It's at work station. We are on the weekends to tell our story. And then we're Monday and Tuesdays, almost all day, just following up for the weekend ads. And we do see a bump in leads when we run those. And being that I've been on the station for so many years, we built some capital on that station. And so it makes it, you know, can I tell you that I can track it all the way down to a lead? No. But what I can say is that when we look at our name searches online and those types of things, when we run those ads, we do get more traffic. People are searching by name, which is ultimately what I want them to do. Instead of them searching, you know, Raleigh Pest Control, I'd rather them be searching, you know, Triangle Pest Control instead.
Donnie, I don't want to go into this with a full detailed conversation, but you have a couple of other projects you're working on that I think could be beneficial to some other people that listen to us. Do you want to tell us about some of your other businesses and what you're doing?
Yeah, so I have two others. One product that we have is called Back Office, and that product was built because as I kind of went through this process, you know, I talked about eMyth. Of you know, training folks and doing inspections and doing reviews and those types of things. We went out on the market to look for stuff and we just simply couldn't find it. And so Back Office is something that we created to kind of fill that void. And one of the things, well, it does a lot of things, but the main thing that it's focused on is managing your team, right? So you can put online training up. And the beautiful thing about Back Office is that one of the things that we designed into it is the ability to share content. So if you're a pest control company or a lawn care company, whatever, you can have a training program in literally minutes because there's a community of folks out there that share this data with you, you know? So Back Office is a product that manages training, you know, it manages reviews and inspections. And you basically put in your management strategy, you hit save, and then emails start flying and inspections start hitting. And you can be sure as a business owner that if you say, hey, I want my technicians inspected once a week, well, Back Office is going to make sure that it happens and it's going to track it, right? So that's kind of the first product. The second thing that we've been working on is a product called Lead Builder. And this is an internet marketing product. And what it does is, you know, depending on what industry you're in, We do work for a lot of lawn care companies. We do work for a lot of pest control companies, but we also have some large companies like ACC Sports. We've got, you know, we do Duke University. And I did just say doo-doo, by the way. And but it's a product that focuses on kind of whatever your inbound strategy is going to be. So this is everything from email marketing to organic SEO to pay-per-click advertising. It's kind of full service all the way up to design. And so those other two projects, you know, they're under a company. One's called Real Green Analytics. The other one's called Coal March, and they're going well. You know, I think in probably 2 to 3 years, those two companies will be larger than my pest control company. They're growing very rapidly right now.
You really couldn't get out of the software market, could you? It must be in your blood.
It's so funny because I never had when we built Back Office, I never had the intention of selling it. It was kind of a quick and dirty thing. Hey, we need something that tracks our reviews, and so we wrote something. And then like, hey, we need something to do online training. You know, we tried products like Moodle and a few others, and we're like, man, this is just too bloated. Let's whip up something real quick. And over time, like after about a year and a half, you know, some of my friends were like, dude, where are you getting this software from? Like, oh, we just built it. It's no big deal. And they're like, well, you need to sell this. And I'm like, no. But after I heard it like 20 times, I'm like, well, let's just see. And so we opened it up to the marketplace. And you know, we've had challenges in terms of any kind of software development, like anyone does. But ultimately, that product is growing extremely fast, and it's gaining a lot of momentum. And I think a lot of folks, you know, they appreciate the fact that there's a turnkey solution, you know, for training and inspections and reviews, because again, it's just not something that's very easy to do. So anyway.
So tell me a little bit more about this Lead Builder, and have you worked with any painting companies?
We've not worked with any painting companies. So Lead Builder, it's a pretty interesting product. What we do is we'll go in and let's just say someone calls up. Let's say it's house cleaning services in Colorado, okay?
Just hypothetical.
Just out of the air.
I'm just throwing stuff out of the air here. Come on. but let's just say it's that. And so what we'll do is we'll look at the market. You know, so we do what's called a process called basically where we do the kind of this pre-research, right? It's called a discovery process. So we'll look at your market. We'll look at your cities. Look at your industry, and essentially we kind of get our thumb on what's happening in the market, who are the key players, what are the opportunities, and then once we kind of figure that out, then we look at your website, and we look at, you know, have you guys ever read a book called Convert?
No, I haven't.
No.
It's a phenomenal book. It's about web marketing, and it's not the traditional, like, you need to do this to get to the top of the Google. It actually talks about, you know, what are people doing online, and how do you make it so that when they get to your website, that literally whatever they're wanting to do, they don't have to think about it, right? It just happens. And one of the concepts that's introduced in that book, which I just think is wonderful, is called levels of awareness. And there's like, you know, 0 through 5. And 0 meaning that someone doesn't even know they have a problem, to 5 is that they purchased, right? And so we go through and we look at your target customer, we look at where are these people? Where do they fall out on levels of awareness? And then we build out content. We optimize pages based on that. So we build a website. We make sure we cover not only the levels of awareness, but we also cover your major markets. So let's just say, and I apologize. I don't know any of the suburbs in Colorado, but let's just say you had 5 different submarkets. Well, then we create landing pages for each one of those markets, in addition to whatever industry that you're working in. And then we take them to that, you know, that kind of levels of awareness. And so you almost think of it like, okay, so there's 5 main market pages. And within those 5 main market pages, there's also another 5 that describe, you know, these, you know, that we want to capture people wherever they're at, you know, whatever level of awareness they're at. So the goal is just to take them from, hey, I've got this dirty house, I just don't have time to do it. Well, then what's the next step? And here's a solution. And we kind of, you know, walk them through that to eventually, hopefully, a sale for our client. And so once that's all done, and I know this is taking a long time, but it's a large question, right? The goal is to continue to build your customer base. We'll do it through pay-per-click advertising. And my goal, and when it comes to internet marketing, is I don't necessarily want the first link on the first page. Obviously, we know that's very valuable. Everyone knows that. I want as many links on the first page as possible. You know, not just, it's great if I can get one link on the first page, it's great if I can get number one, but you know, there's 15 links there. What do you think is better, owning the number one slot or owning 7 of those links, right? Most people are gonna look at that and say, well, you know, what are the odds, right? So anyway, it's to go in and dominate that industry, whatever that is. And then, you know, we get into things later on the backside of, you know, email marketing, you know, kind of developing and your own customer database, and you know, how do we sell those folks more services and those types of things. And that's more of kind of on the consulting side, but that's something that, you know, once you get matched, because we have what we call a marketing consultant that works with our clients once they do the website build, and all of those strategies are things that they do as they go along, because different businesses have different needs. You know, if one customer has 300 customers, well, he's not going to be that interested in email marketing as a customer has 10,000 customers, right? That's a completely different scenario. So it's kind of customized based on the company once we get past the website build and we get into kind of the more month-to-month marketing. So
if folks are interested in Lead Builder or Back Office, how do they get a hold of you?
The best thing to do is go to our website. It's colmarch.com, like C-O-A-L-M-A-R-C-H, colmarch.com. That has all of our internet marketing information, as well as our information on our back office product. And I think both of those products are, it fits, you know. I mean, ultimately, we don't want to sell to people that it doesn't fit to their client. I mean, to whatever the needs are. But I know for me, you know, this internet marketing company, I purchased it because I simply could not get out of any SEO company what I wanted. And this company, I didn't start the internet marketing company. I didn't start from scratch. It was I had a relationship with that company before, and I had been through like 5 different SEO companies, and these people knew the most. And I'm like, you know, the only way I'm really going to get what I want is if I really get to call the shots here. And so, I met with the owner, and who's a great guy. He's still with the company, and we talked, and we said, you know what, this makes sense. And I, you know, I would love to tell you that I do call all the shots, but actually he still does. but you know, ultimately though, you know, we're taking what we're learning with Triangle Pest, and we're wrapping it up into a product and allowing other people in other service industries to use it to grow their business. I mean, ultimately, when you look at what's driving Lead Builder, it really is Triangle Pest. You know, Triangle Pest, I mean, we're always experimenting. We always try new things, and things that work go into the Lead Builder product. Things that don't, you know, we learn from it, and we say, well, we don't do that anymore, and we move on. So
what's the ideal customer for Lead Builder? Like, what size company?
Generally speaking, the ideal customer would be really someone who is aggressive in wanting to grow, who really cares about growing their business. We like clients that are over 1 million, although we do have some clients that are as low as, you know, 200,000, 300,000 in revenue. And, you know, and again, it really comes down to the business owner. I don't mind, you know, a $200,000-$300,000 company, you know, it's going to be an expensive investment for them, but they won't be there very long because they understand that, hey, this is going to grow my company. A company that's, you know, over a million, they typically have the funds in order to put together a project. Because, you know, a project this size and doing this, it's a pretty involved thing, you know. So, yeah, ideal client would be, you know, service company, roughly about $1 million, somewhere around there, or greater, of course. You know, we have some really large clients, too, but yeah, it's kind of the entry level.
Donnie, if one of your kids came up to you as an adult now and asked you, and you can only give them one piece of advice and they're starting their own business, what would that one piece of advice you'd give your own kids for running their own business?
For running their own business? Well, okay, so can I digress here just for a moment?
You can do, you can.
Because this is pretty funny. Okay, first of all, let me just say, I feel really sorry for my kids. So growing up in the Shelton household, the word allowance that's a foreign word, okay? So we don't do allowances in the Shelton household.
You don't happen to do commission, do you?
We are commission only.
Love it.
And the way it works is that you have phases, and you have to turn in a sheet that must be signed each night. And even if you do the work and you forget to turn in the sheet, you don't get paid because you have to be responsible. And so the fact that any of my kids would come up to me and ask me about business, I don't think it's going to happen because they're already going to know before they get out. But if I were to just go back down that road, if I were going to give any advice,
maybe you adopted somebody that was older and now they're your child.
Or maybe the neighbor's kid.
The neighbor's kid.
Yeah.
Let me think about that for a moment. You know, one piece of advice is just so hard to throw it into. I would think probably the best piece of advice. You know, you always hear all these cliches like hire people smarter than you and stuff like that. Ultimately, I would say fail fast. I think that's probably the best piece of advice I could get because, you know, the more, and I know that sounds weird and no one likes it, but the more you fail, the faster you're going to figure out what's working. And the faster you can do that, the faster you can get money, the faster you can make a profit. I mean, everything speeds up because and obviously I don't mean that in tongue in cheek, like, hey, let's go out and spend, you know, all of our revenue on this one project. But ultimately, though, you know, I think a lot of people, fear is a real emotion. It is really real. And a lot of folks either don't go into business or they never reach up to their potential because they're so afraid of being, you know, of one, making a mistake, but two, you know, being worried about someone else is going to think of them as dumb or, you know, reckless or whatever because they made a mistake. And that is it's a hard thing to get over. I think we all have to kind of confront that. But ultimately, though, once you kind of move past that, things get really interesting, I think. They get very good. So...
Well, Donnie, thanks for sharing. It was great having you today. You've got a lot of stuff for us to chew on.
Man, I feel like I got an MBA today.
You're right.
I got like 5 pages of notes here.
You got the Bubbo version, okay? It wasn't a Duke MBA, by the way.
Maybe it was more South Carolina style.
That's right. I don't know.
All right, Donnie, you take care. Good luck with everything.
All right, we'll see you guys.
Thanks, All right. Donnie. All right, John, I don't know if I have enough notes on that interview.
Well, you know, I don't usually see you take many notes with anybody we interview, and you have a page full of notes there.
I have more than one.
Maybe
I have like three or four. Yeah.
So I think you like this interview.
I don't know. People listening probably could hear the pages turning as I was filling up the pages.
Tell me. I know you got a lot of stuff there, but give me one or two things that you took away that you thought was very powerful and it impacted you.
You know, I liked when you asked him about what's your biggest piece of advice, and he said fail fast. And that goes back to what we had the other night at our meetup, our local meetup here in Denver, when we were talking to some folks. They liked hearing about those stories of people failing. And I think That's the great thing about the show is we can learn from other people. So now I know I'm not going to try to do TV ads for my painting business unless I've got $1 million to put towards that budget. It's kind of like, you know, our philosophy on don't buy a new car unless you've got $1 million.
That's right.
So don't, unless you've got $1 million budget, don't try TV advertising.
You know, one of the things that I liked what he said, and we talked a little bit about it with him after the show, but when he was choosing initially what business to go into and he chose pest control, one of the reasons for it in the plus column, if you will, was that you could retain people longer. These people could get paid, you know, great wages, and you wouldn't have those employee turns like other industries. And for me, being in lawn care, this really just hit home, like right between the eyes, that is a big deal. I mean, you don't want to flip people. It's hard to build a business anyways.
I kept thinking you guys were saying flip people off.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, sometimes you want to do that. I mean, they piss you off so much, you want to flip them off.
But you mean flip them like flip them out the door.
Yeah, you don't want to flip them. You don't want to turn them. You don't want to get rid of them. I mean, it's so hard to bring in new people and train them that, man, you want to build a team. You want to build a family. You want to build a culture. And I just thought that was awesome kind of advice there.
I think that you said this after we get off the phone with him, but he is definitely the real deal.
He is. He's a unique individual. He runs his business in a very disciplined manner. And he's a good guy.
So before I let you go, I got to remind you, go check out our website. I always put show notes. All my notes from these three or four pages will not make the show notes on the website. I will just be honest with you. But I try to do my best of hitting the high points and giving the links that we talked about. So his other businesses will be in those show notes so you can link over to that. And but there's always the links for iTunes and Stitcher so you can listen on your smartphone, whether it's an iPhone or one of those other things.
By the way, listeners, help me out here. You got to help me convince Nick we need to take down our icon on iTunes with this ugly guy that's half naked. We used to have a pretty girl there, and I'm not sure why Nick took it down, but he is bent on this this ugly naked guy. So give him some feedback, please. Ladies, gentlemen, as always, thanks for joining us.
Well, there we have ladies and one gentleman. Is that what we have?
Ladies and gentlemen, as always, thanks for joining us. And until next week,
I'm Nick.
And I'm Johnny Battle. See ya.
You've been listening to Small Business Naked with Nick and Johnny. For more episodes and more information, go to smallbusinessnaked.com.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us, as always. And until next... And until next week.
You gotta start that whole thing over because I can't cut that.
All right.